I was going to talk about culture a little bit. A lot of stuff happening in our culture right now that's discouraging and can make us feel kind of disappointed and can make us think, you know, how do we respond to this? And so, you know, for just a little bit this morning, I want to talk about what I think would be a good response to culture. But I want to start off by mentioning something that happened a few years ago, about, I guess it's like 6 or 7 years ago. There was a tornado. There was a storm that happened. And we took a tour of it. It was in Hackleburg, Alabama, and we went with a couple churches in Memphis, and we went and looked at some of the wreckage from these tornadoes and these storms that were happening in that area. And it was just devastating walking around and seeing the damage that was done there. And we went with one of the other ministers in town had an uncle and aunt that lived there, and so we went and actually looked at their home. This is not their home. This is just a picture I found on Google. But we looked and went and looked at their home, and their home was just completely destroyed. And I remember very vividly, like, walking around and hearing it was either the aunt or it was somebody that was connected to her that just kept saying this phrase over and over again. She kept saying, "This is not the way it's supposed to be." She'd be like, "The kitchen should be here. This doesn't look like the kitchen." And she'd be like, "Man, this is not the way it's supposed to be." And she kept saying that over and over again. And to me, as I was hearing her say that, and, you know, and I can't imagine what she was feeling. I mean, the feeling of, you know, being just totally devastated to see all this stuff just flipped upside down and torn apart. But that phrase really stuck with me. And I think that idea of it's not the way it's supposed to be is a good description for what's happening today. We look around at everything. We see all this devastation. We see stuff flipped upside down. And we think to ourselves, like, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. It shouldn't be this way. In the culture we live in today, it's a perfect storm of a variety of these emerging trends that are coming together and are really changing the landscape that we're living in today. I mean, even since I was in high school, which wasn't too terribly long ago, for some of you maybe it was a little bit longer, but there's been quite a few significant cultural changes since then. I wanted to show this chart real quick. So this Johnston Company did this Institutions of Influence, and they, for decades and decades, they have been asking people doing these surveys, what are the main influencers in our culture today? For your family, for you, what influences you the most? And so in the 60s, the things that influenced people, the number one thing was family, number two was school, number three was friends and peers, and coming in at number four was the church as far as the top influencers. Now, by bringing this up here, I'm not suggesting we go back to the 60s. But one thing about the 1960s that they found in doing their survey is that it was a moral versus immoral culture. At that time, it was very clear, this is right and this is wrong. Now, people still did wrong things, okay? Just because it was the 60s didn't mean that people didn't sin. People still sinned, but it was very clear, like, people knew this is a sin. This is bad. This is wrong. We shouldn't be acting this way. People looked at people's behavior and they judged their behavior. People knew what was right. There was a moral center that everybody pretty much agreed on. You know, if you'd been at a friend's house and you messed up, by the time you got home, your mom was called, and, you know, that was the culture at the time, acted that way. In the Bible, one of the things about the Bible was the higher voice in the 1960s, is one of the things that this survey found. Then you get to the 1980s, the 1990s, and a lot of that's changed. Notice number one, what's still the top influence? It's family. Now, friends and peers is past school. Media has jumped way up from the 60s. School's number four. And church is much further down the list. Church is, I think, like seven or eight in the 1980s, 1990s. And one of the things about the culture at that time is they found that it's an amoral culture, meaning people aren't really sure what's right. People aren't really sure what's wrong. What's right for you may not be what's right for me, but that's okay. At this time, you know, they found that there was an increased acceptance of divorce. Materialism and entitlement has, you know, run rampant. It's become a kind of a me decade. You can see it in the media and the TV shows. And at that time, the Bible is not the highest voice. In fact, the Bible has become the media and friends and that sort of thing becomes the Bible. Then for today, okay, and this survey is a little bit dated, so I'm sure some of this is even stronger now. Notice, it was interesting to me, what is the number one influencer? Still family, right? Media jumps up to number two. Number three is friends and peers. Number four is school, and the church is way down the list. Like, it's not even in the top 10. And what they actually found is media and friends and peers were above family, but the reason they still put family at number one is they have found that the media kind of influences the family, and because of that, then the family then passes that down to their children as well. And what they found is media is absolutely shaping peers, shaping friends. The peer pressure at this time is kind of this unspoken expectation that everyone thinks something is right, or this is the way you're supposed to do something. And so one thing that they really noticed is that from the 60s, where this is right and this is wrong, once we get to today, or really this is probably 7 or 8 years ago, what they found is what used to be right is now wrong, and what was wrong is now right. And so, you know, this it's kind of flipped upside down. And what they've also found is that the Bible's voice in culture is much lower. For teens today, you know, Kanye has the same voice as the Bible, right? So the Bible does not have any higher meaning in a child's life for a lot of our teenagers than it does somebody that they might see in the media. And so we see this, and, you know, like walking around a devastating destruction from a storm, you have to think to yourself, this is not the way that it's supposed to be. My parents, you know, talk that way. You know, you'll see people on Facebook sharing articles and posts that basically come to this point. This is what's going on. Like, you know, this is awful. This is terrible. This is happening. I mean, you know, just this past week, think of the things that have happened in our culture that just make you, I don't want to say depressed, but make you feel really discouraged. You know, we have the riots in Charlottesville. Got people waving the Nazi flag. You know, it's unbelievable. You have a terrorist attack, multiple terrorist attacks in Barcelona. And, you know, you just look around and you're like, what is going on? Like, this is insane. This is devastating. This is wrong. And so it's disappointing to see the culture and the way that it is. And so, you know, one of the ways that I want to see how we respond to this, I want to look at a passage together. So in Acts chapter 26, 24 through 26. So Paul, multiple times in Acts, he basically tells his story. He tells about how he became a follower of Jesus. And he tells the whole thing. He uses it as an opportunity to share, you know, what Jesus has done for him. And so after he has shared this at one point, he gets into this conversation. Verse 24, at this point, Festus interrupted Paul's defense. He's talking to King Agrippa here. And Festus interrupts Paul and says, Paul, you are out of your mind, Paul, he shouted. Your great learning is driving you insane. Verse 25, I'm not insane, most excellent Festus, Paul replied. What I am saying is true and reasonable. And you get this contrast here, okay? Paul believes what he is doing, what he's saying, what he believes is true and reasonable. But what does Festus think about what he believes? He thinks Paul's crazy. He thinks Paul's insane. And there's this very clear contrast between the two sides. And I think this absolutely still happens today. There's something that we believe. Do we believe that it's true and reasonable? But there's going to be other people in our culture that look at what we believe and look at what we say, and they're going to think, you are out of your mind. You're crazy. You're insane for believing this. You know, in our world today, if you think differently than our culture, something is wrong with you. You're a bigot, right? You know, you get labeled a certain way because of that. Things like tolerance and diversity and pluralism, being cool with what other people think is, you know, the way you're supposed to act. I will say for teenagers today, I work with teenagers, being a friend today is really just being okay with whatever your friend is doing. It's being cool with whatever your friend is doing. It's not saying, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong what you're doing. I'm worried about you. That's not being a friend today. Being a friend today is being accepting of their behavior. Friendship has become letting friends do whatever they want. And for us as Christians, for us as parents and grandparents, you know, aunts and uncles, you know, we need to be showing that behavior does matter. Our behavior does matter. You'll see on Facebook and things like this, especially after some of these, you know, rallies and riots, you'll see a lot about love, and we need love, and we need love, and like, yes, we need to love each other. That's important. But we can't stop there. Like, that's only telling half the story by just focusing on love. Behavior does matter to Jesus. And as Christians, we need to be able to show people that. Jimmy Fallon, I like Jimmy Fallon for the most part. I think he's really funny. But he had this joke a few years ago where he said, North Korea has officially agreed to suspend its nuclear program. Apparently, they watched one episode of Toddlers in Tiaras and realized we're destroying our own society. And hearing him say that, there's maybe some truth to that. Like, we are destroying our own society in some sense. So how do we navigate this? You could ask tons of parents. You could read 20 different articles and blogs about, specifically how parents, grandparents should respond to this with their own kids. And all of them, I think, will disagree on how strict or how lenient you should be, when you should give a cell phone to your kids, how much screen time you should give them. But I do think all of these articles will agree on one common denominator, and that is that you have to talk to your kids about this stuff. One thing, no matter how conservative or liberal or religious or non-religious, you could pull up 10 great sets of parents, and they'd all have 10 different views on, how to parent and what shows they let their kids watch and all that kind of stuff. But I think all of them would come to one common conclusion is that, and that is we have to talk to our children about the things that we're seeing in our culture today. We need to walk with our kids through this life. And so where do we look for guidance in this? Obviously here at a BBS, I think we need to look at Scripture. Deuteronomy chapter 6, 5 through 7. We probably know this passage. Here we got Moses before all of God's people. He's before parents and grandparents. And he's saying, God's truth. He's talking about God's truth. And he's like, we know it. It is on our hearts. But then he says in verse 7, he's like, don't just impress the truth of God on your hearts. Verse 7, he says this. He says, impress it on this next generation. Impress it on your children. And this is this truth about God, Moses is saying. This truth about God, talk about it with your kids. And notice where he says to do it. He says, talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. And you look at that and some of that's like, wow, that's great. That's awesome. Like, we should be doing that. But it's also a little bit overwhelming. I mean, that is all the time. And you might look at that and be like, I have a job. My kids are in school all day. We get home and it's hard to even find an hour to be together, to eat together. Who can do that? Who has time? Who can speak to their kids about this stuff all day long? Which is basically seems to be what Moses is saying. You need to be with them all day long talking about this. Who has time for that? Who can do that? You might think, I'm not in their ears 24/7. The thing is, though, is that someone is. Someone is in our children's ears 24/7. There was this census that was done, the Common Sense Census. And it's worth checking out. There's a lot of information about how much technology our kids use. Also a little bit about how much parents use as well, which I'll show a graphic here in a second as well. But I'll just summarize it. Basically, the Common Sense Census, and this is a couple years old, says that kids, really it's tweens and teens it's talking about, use 9 hours a day of screen time. And that's on the phone, that's playing video games, that's watching TV, although our kids don't really watch TV in their teenage years anymore. They really watch YouTube and Netflix and things like that. But it's 9 hours a day, which if you think about it, maybe isn't that surprising. It's no wonder our teenagers don't have permanent bruises on their forehead from just, in their phones walking and, hitting walls all the time. It's not really surprising about that, because we see kids on it all the time. I mean, at the school that my children go to, they're giving them iPads in fourth grade, right? We're not making it any easier for less screen time. We are putting it in their hands constantly. I think at the school it was kind of, they're using it anyways. Let's get it in their hands, which is good, but it seems like our kids more and more are on those screens all the time. And what they found is that it changes the way that our children think. It changes the way that our kids communicate. There are some big negatives from them being on their screens all the time. And one of the charts I saw, I know it's really hard to see from this distance, but I found that, hey, kids aren't the only ones that are on their screens 9 hours a day. They found that parents are on their screens over 9 hours, 9 hours and 22 minutes a day. And, you might be like, well, that's work. What they found is about 7.5 hours of that is not work-related. And so they're looking at us. They're seeing our example. I'm bad about this, being on my phone, got a kid that comes up and is, asking me questions or want me to do something, and it is hard to pull ourselves away from that. And so our kids are seeing us do that, and it's affecting them. And this is, this has been happening for a while, okay? So here's a picture of, what do they call that? What is that when somebody does that? It's a selfie, right? We all know what that word is. 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, we didn't really know what that word was as much. That's becoming a very popular thing. So all of us in here know what a selfie is, right? That's a newer word. That word's come in the last decade or so. Many people believe like the selfie really took off and got really popular with this picture. This happened at the Oscars in like 2014. And so since then, people think that the selfies have gotten even more and more popular. Look, I think that's a picture from the Kardashian show. I can never tell which one's which. But the selfies are very popular. I was looking at some statistics on it. Okay, and the average millennial to someone in their 20s, maybe early 30s, they take 9 selfies a week, and they spend an average of 7 minutes perfecting each one. And so what they found is that's 54 hours of selfies each year, and that's 25,700 selfies in a lifetime. I'll say, like, I've never taken a picture of just myself like that. I don't think I have. My wife can correct me on that. But that's the average of how many people take on that. And all of this is coming from a device that is in our pocket. And this is just one of the things that's influencing us. And it's changing so much. Some of you that have been around a little bit longer, you maybe are seeing like how rapidly things are changing just in the past few years. I mean, for me, I'm talking to, I've got teenagers in the youth group. I teach 8th grade Bible at Mobile Christian. And like these kids have not really grown up in a world without these screens. Even when I was in high school, like not everybody had a cell phone and they were very basic and you had Snake and that was it, right? But things have changed very quickly, very rapidly on that. I think it's changed the way people think about themselves, also the way people communicate. It's changed the way that young ladies view themselves. And it's not the only device they've got. They have all kinds of devices that they're on all the time. And so, okay, so I'm not in their ear all the time, but technology and culture is in their ear and in front of their faces 9 hours a day. And so what are they gleaning? What are they learning from these sources? Let me just share a couple things that I've noticed in the past couple weeks. And probably like 3 weeks, the past 3 weeks, maybe a month, there was this video that came out, and it's called In a Heartbeat. It's a YouTube video. It's about 4 minutes long. It's a cartoon. Has anybody seen that in here? Okay. It's been shared about 30 million times. I actually, we showed this in my teen class on Wednesday night, and we talked about it. So what it is, it's this 4-minute cartoon, and it is very, very well done. These two guys, as kind of their senior project at some university, they did a Kickstarter. They were trying to raise like $3,000 to make this movie, and they ended up raising like $14,000. And so they made this short film. Very well done. The music is good. It makes you feel all kinds of emotion. And it's basically a love story between two kids, the two boys. And so one of the boys is kind of at the beginning, he's hiding behind a tree, and he sees another boy who's kind of a popular boy walking, and his heart starts beating really fast. And the heart jumps out of his chest, and it's this cute little cartoon heart that basically has a mind of its own. And the heart's moving around, and it's chasing after this other boy, and the boy who's the heart belongs to is trying to get the heart, and he's trying to pull it back, and it's funny at different times. At one point, the heart gets away from him and grabs onto the boy. They're both holding onto the heart. Everybody starts staring, and the one boy starts to feel uncomfortable. The heart rips away. The one boy takes his half of the broken heart, runs off and hides, and then the other boy comes, kind of grabs his hand. They put the heart together, then they sit together, and then the other boy's heart starts glowing and beating, and then the two hearts come together and ends that way. That was probably not the best explanation of it, but basically what stands out to me about the video is it teaches the heart can't help what it wants. The heart has a mind of its own. You can't help control what the heart wants. And in this situation, the heart wanted for this boy to like another boy. To me, this is a very dangerous video, and we talked about it in class. And I will say, we looked at it in my 8th grade class. We looked at it at church. There's some kids that really struggled with that not being the right idea, that, you should follow your heart. You can't help who you fall in love with. You can't help who your heart chases after. And so we had to talk a little bit about, the dangers of that, and that we can't just follow our heart. We have to follow Jesus. But this video is absolutely targeting children. It's targeting young kids. It is well done. Very well done. It would not surprise me if this becomes like a big major motion picture because it's gained a lot of popularity. It's also very dangerous. There's a lot of things dangerous about it. One of the things I noticed too about the video, I was kind of Googling some stuff about it. There is like no Christian. There's no church response anywhere that I could find on Google about it. Everything about it is articles about this is, you know, amazing. This is going to change things. This is awesome. And so that's just one thing that's happened in the past few weeks. Another thing is Doc McStuffins. Y'all heard of Doc McStuffins before? If you got little kids or in your house at some point and they want to watch Disney Junior, Doc McStuffins is a Disney Junior show. So it's kind of geared towards 5 years old, 6 years old, under maybe. So came out a couple weeks ago, one of the characters on that show had two moms in the episode. And Disney, my wife actually read an article about it. Disney was very intentional about it. They went to the creator of the show. The creator of the show is a lesbian. She did not go to Disney asking if she could do this. Disney came to her and said, we want you to put this in one of your shows. And so this is a show for, like, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, four-year-olds are watching it. And this is the culture that we live in. Our teenagers, our tweens, our, you know, our younger kids that watch Netflix, you know, a lot of these Netflix shows that they watch all the time, a lot of the YouTube shows that they're pulling up, this is a part of the culture that we live in. And they're learning a lot from this 9 hours a day or more that they're spending in front of these screens. And so how do we respond to our kids that are immersed in our culture? They are saturated in this culture that we're looking around and we're like, this is not the way that's supposed to be. How do we respond to this? For us, when we see it, hopefully, we know that it's a bunch of lies. Hopefully, we look at it and we're like, this is not the way that it should be. This is not true. These are a bunch of lies. But then I also wonder, how often do we tell them the truth? How often do we tell our kids the truth? How do we respond? How do we comment on what's happening in the culture? And I want to look at Acts chapter 17 together. I did not put this one on the screen, and I wish that I had. So in Acts chapter 17, Paul has been going around, and he's kind of been kicked out of some places in Berea, and he kind of got run out of there, and he's in Athens in Acts 17. And he's speaking to a group of people. And the group of people that he's speaking to, they are constantly saturated with all their secular ideas. And it's changing the way that they think. I mean, does that sound familiar? Like what they're experiencing in Athens is what we're experiencing, I think, today. So in verse 16, it says this, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day, with those who happen to be there. All right, so he goes to Athens. Paul is deeply troubled with the idols there. He's distressed by that. He's probably looking around and be like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. He's so bothered by what he saw. And Paul's desire is to reach the people there. And so what Paul ends up doing, if you're familiar with the story, is he notices the idols, kind of like what we have. And he sees idols to everything. And that mindset, I think, absolutely fits our culture. They had an idol to everything. We kind of have an idol to everything, too. Basically in Athens, they might have just had a big coexist sticker on the back of their camels or whatever. And so that's kind of the culture mindset that they're in. It's like, let's embrace all of it. Let's embrace all these idols. We'll embrace everything. All of these ideas are good. And what Paul finds, if you remember, he finds an idol that's addressed to an unknown God. So he's so distressed by what he saw. And you know, Paul is one who knew what it was like to get caught up in religion instead of in a relationship. And for us, it's distressing too. It's distressing for us when we see all these idols here. And so I love what he does. What he doesn't do is he doesn't overreact. I think sometimes as adults, as parents, as grandparents, our response is to overreact. You know, maybe we hear a song on the radio, and we're like, do you have that song in your phone? You know, let me see your phone. Let me put that in your phone. Or let me see if it's in your phone. And then, you know, you're grounded, right? My response oftentimes is probably to overreact. That's a common parent response. I want to show you this one video real quick of a parent response here. It's like 20 seconds. Oh, it's okay. It's okay if you don't have the sound. It's all right. So basically, his daughter had done some stuff on Facebook that was not good. And so he made this video, and he posted it to her Facebook. All right? He's saying, that's your laptop. And then he says, and here's my handgun. It's almost over, David. And then he shoots it, and then he shoots it again, and he proceeds to shoot it a bunch of times. I mean, you know, And that's one way to handle it, I guess, right? Might be a little bit of an overreaction. That got a lot of views on Facebook or YouTube or whatever. I think like 45 million times people watched it. And some people were like, yes, this is why. And maybe you look at that and you're like, yeah, that's the way we should respond. Let's just blow it up, right? Let's take their devices and their screens and let's just destroy them and shoot them and, you know, blow them to smithereens. And then there won't be a problem, right? We'll just shelter them from it and they'll never be around it and that will be okay. Well, unless we're going to lock our kids and our grandkids in our houses to where they never leave, they are going to be around this stuff and culture. If they go into a checkout line in a grocery store and they just look around at some of the magazines on the racks, you are going to see some things, your kids will see some things that we cannot shelter them from. If we overreact, studies have found that have happened, this guy named Jonathan McKee, he says this is the cycle that happens specifically for teenagers when we overreact. For the teenager, it feels like there's broken trust. And then their next step, they're just going to go quiet, silence. I'm not going to say anything. It's no use. Just going to make things worse if I say something. And then they go to avoidance. Okay? I'm just going to avoid this conversation. I'm going to avoid this topic. I'm not going to talk to my parents about it. And then finally they go to sneaking, where I'm just going to get somewhere else. I'm going to watch this at my friend's house. I'm going to borrow my friend's phone. I'm going to borrow my friend's iPad or whatever. And I'm just not going to tell my parents about it, and they won't know. And so we don't want that. We don't want our kids to get into that cycle. And so, how do we respond? How do we respond? Well, Paul does something really fascinating. He dialogues with the people there. He takes their own known God. He reasons with them. He has a discussion on whether stuff was true. Now, I think for us, how we respond, I think we need to make sure our kids know that just because something is common doesn't mean that it's good. Just because everybody feels one way doesn't mean that it's right. And what we need to do as Christians is we need to show our kids, hey, as a follower of Jesus, we need to test everything by God's standards. We need to show them God's map and say, this is the way that we're supposed to live. And yeah, it's different than the way that everybody else lives, but that's what followers of Jesus do. Culture acts as a map. Culture acts as a mirror, too, I've heard as well, where one of the things that culture does is, you know, our young kids, and I see this with our middle schoolers, they'll watch these shows on Netflix, and it'll be shows about high school students doing things that high school students should not be doing. And for our middle school students, and even younger, they'll watch these shows, and they'll be like, okay, that's how I'm supposed to act. And so it's this mirror reflecting to them, like, this is the way that you're supposed to live. And it acts like this map that tells people what to believe and how to live. And so we need to show them God's map. And what we need to do is, I think what Paul does, we need to turn overreaction into interaction, where we interact and dialogue and communicate with our children, our kids, our grandkids, our nephews, nieces. We need to do what Paul does. We need to take their idols. One of the things that Paul does, actually, in Acts 17, in verse 28, he says this. He says, "For in him we live and move and have our being." And he says this, "As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring." See what he does there? He takes their own poets of the day, their famous poets of the day, and he takes what they've said, and he uses it to make a point to them. He uses it to teach them. He takes basically their Lady Gaga of the day, right? And he says, here's what this poet says. Let me show you what the truth is about that. And he uses it as a springboard to talk about truth. Paul's looking around. He's like, whoa, you guys are religious. You even have an idol to an unknown God. He's like, I know who that is. I know who this unknown God is. And it's not made of stone. It's not made of gold. And he uses that idol as a springboard. And so, you know, I guess kind of the final thought for this first lesson is, you know, what does turning overreaction into interaction look like in your home? What does it look like in our community? What does it look like when it's dialogued, when it's talked about? It doesn't mean that we let our kids and our grandkids do whatever they want. But it means that, you know, when they do encounter some of this, that we are ready to have those conversations, that we don't avoid it, but that we use what they're experiencing in our culture, and we take that and we use it as a teaching opportunity for our kids. They're going to hear stuff. They're going to see stuff. It's going to bother us. Let's tell them why that it bothers us. Let's show them that just because something is common and typical and everybody does this, that that's not necessarily means that it's good, and show them what God's map is for it. One suggestion I'd have, if you're interested in more of this stuff, there's this this weekly email that I get. It's called the Culture Translator. It's by this group called Axis. And so every week, every Friday in my inbox, I get 3 to 5 things that, for me, it's like, you need to know this about culture. This is what's happening in culture this week. And a lot of times I have not heard about it, but the teens in my youth group have, you know, whether it's something that's happened on Twitter or whatever, that I'm just not following as closely. And so that's something I'd suggest if you're interested in keeping track of that on a regular basis.